originally from Somalia. I was born in 1982 in a city called Hargeisa in northern Somalia. And unfortunately, there was a war in 1989, internal civil war, in the northern region that forced my family to relocate to the capital, Mogadishu, in 1989. We lived there till shortly in 1990, when there was another civil war that made the largest exit for a lot of the Somalis. And eventually, my family went to Kenya, and then finally came to Egypt, where my dad was actually abroad. And we lived in Egypt for about 3 years until we were accepted as refugee resettlements here in the United States. So in 1993, February 13, 1993, we were able to relocate here in Minnesota. A very cold and frigid day. Even the jackets that we wear were not sufficient. Somalia, of course, was my early years in childhood. My dad worked in the bank. We were very happy in the region. We still own land in that region. And as a young kid, I enjoyed, running around. I had a lot of relatives, and especially for our culture, extended families is very normal to live and to live next to, and even to be part of. Was a very, it was very normal for us.
What do you remember about the travel from, Somalia to Kenya, though?
It's a long story. That's probably one of the toughest and most darkest times of at least my family. We were in a large caravan going through the small roads out of Somalia into Kenya. And we were actually robbed on the way to Kenya. There was a militia there that thought that we were taking the riches of the country out of the country. That was their reason. And they actually locked us up in a jail, and we had to break away in the middle of night and escape, because it was right next to the border of Kenya. Actually, we were the first family to be refugees in Kenya. There's a camp that was set up shortly after, a few months after the war, and we were the first people there. And I remember in that camp, the first week, there was maybe 10, 15 families after we were the first ones to arrive.
So what was it like when you first came here?
We were very fortunate to have a couple of churches in St. Paul that were part of the hosting process, and they were able to help us, especially when we moved into our first apartment, get us some basic things like chairs and bedding and things like that from their church. And they were very nice people, and I still remember all of them, and it was a great experience as far as that. But also, of course, there's also the other challenges that that meant. Now my dad had to go find a job. We didn't want to take welfare. We just felt that was a little bit demeaning. So working and earning our own money was kind of something we wanted to do. And since we've really never been my dad, of course, was an orphan, but, we worked everything we earned, we worked for it. So we never had anything to hand me down. But we're very fortunate to have the welfare system, at least for the first, I think, months to kind of get us on our feet and until we were able to get jobs. So the first years had a lot of more of first experiences with everything. I remember my first days going to school. I went to Bancroft Elementary in South Minneapolis, a great school. I still remember my teacher, Ms. Lipgard. What an awesome teacher. She was, I was very fortunate to have her, because she was one of the teachers that actually traveled the world. So she had a great experience of dealing with not only Muslims, but just with different cultures. And she was so willing to help me that I remember that she had a teacher's aide, Ms. Leslie Young. I still remember her. And she would take majority of the time that she was there to actually privately tutor me one-on-one outside of class, so I can catch up with the education part. it took me a while, to, of course, to catch up, and especially since when I came, there's no Somali, so, you know, nobody knew what Somalia was, nobody knew where I came from, nobody knew I came from a war, and all of those things were not part of the, were part of the experience of growing and learning the new culture. I remember even I had some fights early on, which is more of cultural misunderstandings in school. But after that, I don't think you ever had any conflict with anybody. And that was just general because of the fact that I couldn't defend myself verbally, you know, maybe physically, but not verbally. I think, generally speaking, I think Minnesotans, we're very fortunate as far as Muslims here in Minnesota, because I think Minnesotans in general are very welcoming. You know, I think Minnesotans have been very accepting and welcoming. I don't know if that would happen in other states, because I've traveled the U.S. and not extensively, but I don't think that we would have received the same. Maybe we would, but maybe the same hospitality that we received. And even a lot of Somalis moved from other states, from Atlanta, in Georgia, from the West Coast in San Diego. So a lot of Somalis who could have stayed in places where much warmer, more like Somalia, didn't stay. And that's probably a lot to say about the not only the environment, the job market, but also knowing that, you know, Minnesotans are that welcoming in providing assistance and help to this community. Now, there, of course, there's been some trouble spots. You know, I graduated from St. Cloud State University. I lived there for about 2 years, and of course that community gets a lot of the heat as being the fact that St. Cloud has some sort of racist tendencies. And I think, from my experience in St. Cloud, I think that most people in St. Cloud or in that region, you know, they're as welcoming as anybody else. I think, but the problem is if you have few people living in that part of town who, you know, don't want Somalis to move, they'll make their mark known. And I think it's unfortunate that there's a larger brush of racism that was kind of blanketed. And of course, post September 11 was a difficult time for Muslims across the United States. And we were very fortunate to live in Minnesota because we didn't get a huge backlash that may would have happened if we were in some other states, I guess. I mean, it was a difficult time, but at the same time, you know, we felt the support, and I remember we had some of the Mayor Shales Felton, I'm forgetting her name. She was there and she was speaking there, and there's many other people who were there who were supporting us and understanding that the issue that had happened in September 11 did not reflect the Muslim community. There was something that was did not belong to the Muslim community. I got involved with a lot of youth organizations when I was younger until now. One of them, of course, hosted by Islamic Center, which again, much of my early childhood here was in, which was called the Muslim Youth of Minnesota. I was actually, I think, a president there for a couple of years as part of this body. And then eventually now I'm an advisor, and we've been doing a lot of programs since. So I've been involved with them and many other different organizations, youth organizations. In general, the Muslim youth have a very distinctive challenge, and this is probably very similar to a lot of the immigrant communities, but it has a different connotation when it comes to religious difference, and that is the double identities. The fact that you have a very strong cultural atmosphere at home, and then you have a very different life that you have outside of the home. And children, especially youth, have a very difficult time balancing those two. So a lot of youth have a very difficult challenges with that, balancing their religious and their cultural requirements at the same time trying to take on some of the new cultures and new practices that their friends and the environment that they live in practices, and finding out which one to take and which one to leave behind. So as part of the youth leaders early on here, that was one of the biggest challenges that we had to overcome, because one of the difficulties was, you know, kids wanted to be entertained. So how can you entertain them without losing your faith, without losing your moral compass or your moral guidelines? or your religious requirements. So as part of the early days, I remember we used to do these sleepovers where, you know, we let them play video games and things like that, basketball. And it was a great opportunity for Muslim youth to come to, you know, an event where other Muslims were there, and they can do the same things that they wanted to do with maybe some other their non-Muslim friends, you know, play video games and even build a larger friendship. So as someone who actually participated in some of those events early on, I think it was one of the things that I still remember. And then, of course, now we do, for example, we've had a very consistent program for 7 years, summer camp up in Brainerd that has been going on with MU that I've been involved with. And that's another thing that I know a lot of the people, a lot of the kids that went to it, some of them even now, you know, short of becoming doctors, some of those kids, you know, still remember that camp because it was a historical point for them. It was an opportunity for them to have such a great environment, such a, you know, the environment that they wanted and the entertainment that they desired. So both in the same. Until today, that is the biggest challenge. Now with the Somali community coming here, they also pose a different challenge because much of the other community, whether it's the Middle East of Arabs or the subcontinents, the Pakistani and Indian Muslim community here, most of them come with two families, two-parent families, as well as also the fact that they are very fortunate to have, you know, most of their parents educated. So either they came here as international students and they lived here afterwards, and so they have education and they can be part of the middle class or even the upper class here in the United States. But that was not the case for the Somali community. Most of them came here with single mothers with 7 to 8 kids, with a mother probably have less education than high school, sometimes even none, and then having to fend, you know, through all of these cultural and environment differences. So a lot of the kids, some of them got lost in the vacuum. And of course, you know, most of the Somali moved into urban area in Minneapolis, so there was a lot of urban issues for the sector of the community that they fit in, which was the African-American community. So most of them, some of the pitfalls that the African-American community was going through became very obvious that the Somali community was going through, especially the youth, whether it's through the acceptance of gangs. They found gangs to be a way to, you know, solve some of their problems. Of course, that's not the case. But so we saw a rise in gang activity. We saw a rise in dropouts. And that's still one of the issues that the Somali community is dealing with and I'm trying to work on to try to change that, because as the community grows, you know, and it has grown exponentially, much of the service providers cannot meet the needs for a large community like this today. And one of the things that I've always had a vision of is to try to elevate these organizations to become more efficient, much more transparent, and more importantly, you know, be able to access more resources. I mean, if they're providing programs to the most at-risk youth kids, to the most needy kids, and they can potentially solve a big problem for us in the future in our community here in Minnesota, then we should put a lot of resources into them. A lot of these organizations are run by volunteers, by youth, and most of volunteers, you know, unless it's, if it's not well funded, it tends to be goes through cycles, you know, where a few years, a lot of activities, great programs, a lot of effect on the community, and then after a while it kind of just goes down because there's less people involved, or that generation of people who were involved have moved on to either college or beyond college. So if these organizations are not really well funded and they do not have the funds to keep a staff going, then it becomes just these cycles and don't become something sustaining that can affect a larger, broader perspective. And then the other issue is that we need to do as far as in the community is to get, you know, ask for help. You know, we're not, you know, our community is very large. The Muslim community here is very large. So ask for help from the institutions that have already been helping a lot of the immigrants. You know, the YMCA, which I actually worked in for several years, is a tremendous organization. And they can provide a tremendous assistance to families. You know, if your children have somewhere to go safe and can be enriched somehow, whether it's a swimming lesson or, you know, a summer program, they can take an opportunity in that instead of doing what normal urban kids do between 3 to 5, which is get into trouble. So if parents know that, and the YMCAs provide a sensitive, culturally sensitive programs, and then the families to feel comfortable that they're being tailored to. And the YMCA is just one example. There's many other organizations, private or public, that the community can tap into to get assistance from, because I think we outgrew our social service organizations that currently exist. So that's one of the things that I'm hoping to try to do. One is to empower these organizations and at the same time ask for help from other organizations. I think Muslim community in general, if you talk about the immigrant community, for instance, they've had to deal with a lot of challenges. I think the two challenges that are probably the most relevant challenges that are very wide is their connection to back home, meaning some other country that they came from. This is probably very well typical in the Somali community, that a lot of the Somalis are extremely interested in somewhat going back home. And that hampers a lot of the future growth and the issues that need to be dealt here. So when you have people living in two different worlds, you lose the opportunity of concentrating and building a new home here. So, you know, that's one of the biggest challenges as far as for the immigrant community. And that, of course, is one of the, you know, I call it the suitcase mentality, where people are just ready to go. They're not really planting or rooting building their roots here. That's slowly starting to change, because time always is the enemy for that move back, because people are expecting to move back. You can't always have your luggage, you know, ready to go for that long thing. Now, when it comes to the religious aspect of dealing with identity crisis, and this is an issue that I've been discussing and even personally went through and tried to mentor youth about, is the most important thing for them is, for example, not their Somali identity and not their American identity. The most important thing is the Islamic identity, because that identity is more, that's the safekeeper. You keep their Islamic identity, it doesn't matter if you're in America or any part of the world, you're always going to be a productive citizen, because you're going to keep the best. Because your religion will dominate who you are and not necessarily where you came from. So that's important. And for people in the transitional period, which a lot of these youth are in, my advice to them is always to keep their Islamic identity, because that will eventually keep part of their heritage, but at the same time build a new heritage here, which they have a right to, because they're not living, for example, in Somalia. Islam is not something that belongs to Somalis or Arabs or whoever. Islam is a doctrine, a religious doctrine, a way of life that people can accept anywhere, wherever they are. The future of Muslim community here, what I would like to be, or what I would like it to look like. One, I would like to see a community that is self-sufficient. Because most communities struggle with their growth because of the fact that they don't understand how to sustain themselves. The second part is a community that is not outside of the community. I think the Somali community or the Muslim community in general should be part of the fabric of the Muslim community or the fabric of the American community, whether it's part of the Minnesotan heritage or wherever else part of the world that, or whatever part of the United States they are. So I would like to see a very connected community, a community that is connected with wherever they are. At the same time, a community that's an example. I mean, if our religion teaches us to be exemplars, to be the exemplars of mankind, then we have to play that role. We have to get to that point where that community is looked upon, for other communities look at us for as an example, so a community to follow. You know, when people want free health care or free clinics, they should know that, you know, we go to the Muslim clinic because they give it as free clinic. You know, they should know that whenever there's a need, because that's the tradition of the Prophet. That's the tradition that we're supposed to carry on. Yeah, I know we came here and, you know, we struggled, and it's not the best climate, it's not the best environment that we probably chose, and we didn't come here running. But eventually we're going to have to get up, crawl, and start walking, and eventually run and be part of this framework and, build the legacy that was built on by the early settlers of here in Minnesota. You know, know, the people that came here didn't expect, you know, when they were in this poor conditions and, you know, as farmers, you know, they didn't know that 694 is going to be here, 94 is going to be here, all, you know, these big buildings and all this stuff. They didn't expect that. They were given this flat land, and they were asked to make something out of it. And that's a, you know, it's a tall order. And I think the Muslim community came here, and they were brought here, and, you know, whichever way, and they're now asked to be part of this community. And the least they can do is to be part of the community, but also be part of the exemplar part of the community. And I think that's my hope for the future.